Welcome to our Holden Village podcast. For over 50 years now, Holden Village has traveled a rich history of faith that has transformed a copper mining town into a vibrant place of education, programming, and worship. Holden has sought to welcome all who seek contemplation and community in the remote wilderness of the beautiful Cascade Mountains. We continue to invite people of all ages to come alongside our rhythms, which inspire and equip travelers for a sustainable life of faith outside the village. And we continue to listen and reflect on our story and history and seek to discover our place in God's creative mission in our world. Our podcasts are a way of sharing our conversations with our teaching faculty around reformation, the reforming of our relationships with the earth, with each other, and with the divine. Let's tune in and join the conversation.
Hi, my name is Drew Hansen. In normal, non-Holden life, I'm Representative Drew Hansen. I serve in the Washington State House of Representatives, where I've been a member since 2011. Some time ago, I wrote a book on the I Have a Dream speech, the dream, Martin Luther King Jr., and the speech that inspired a nation, which is why I'm at Holden this week. I'm teaching a three seminar series on Martin Luther King. First, on his spiritual life, his life as a man of God. Second, on his career as a civil rights activist. And third, on his career as a political figure with some reflections for this particular political moment. This is in 2018, so this may or may not be timely anymore. Some ways, I hope it is very much not timely by the time anyone else listens to this sometime in the future. This is my first time teaching at Holden, but it's not my first time at Holden. I grew up going here with my family and, of course, remember it as the magical place that it still is, but I haven't been back for 26 years. So hopefully I'll get back here before another 26 years have passed. So let me give you the quick version of the three sessions that I led this week. The first was on Dr. King as a man of God, Dr. King's spiritual life, his life as a preacher. As Dr. King said of himself a long ways into the civil rights movement, "In the heart of my hearts, I am a Baptist preacher. This is my being and my calling, for I am also the son of a Baptist preacher, the grandson of a Baptist preacher, and the great-grandson of a Baptist preacher." That was how he saw himself, even deep into the civil rights movement. He grew up in his father's church. As he put it in a seminary essay, "The church has always been a second home for me." He would listen to his father preach and other preachers, both in town, like the Reverend William Holmes Borders, the church just down the street, and traveling pastors who had come through the community. Cain and his friends would go sit up in the balconies when a particularly famous preacher would come by just to see what they were doing. King grew up hearing sermons that emphasized the personal nature of God, the dignity and worth of each person, the need for a conversion, a personal experience with God, and God's prophetic call to do justice. Those were the four foundational beliefs that reappear over and over again in sermons from Dr. King Sr., Dr. Borders, and others. King then went off to Morehouse at the age of 15 and spent a long time in formal higher education, Morehouse, Crozier Theological Seminary, Boston University. And he kept those four key beliefs from his childhood, but encountered a liberal theological tradition that he accepted in some ways. He enjoyed the embrace of biblical criticism, biblical archaeology, science when sort of appropriate and necessary. But he was also dissatisfied with theological liberalism's failure to grapple seriously with the problem of sin, which for King particularly meant, as he put it in a seminary essay, a, quote, "vicious race problem," close quote, that, quote, "made it very difficult for me to believe in the essential goodness of man," close quote. King also was not totally clear how you would preach liberal theology to a congregation in the segregated South. So he leaves his formal theological education with a bunch of questions and without, as he notices, a personal conversion experience of his own. he has that conversion experience in the Montgomery bus boycott. One night he gets a death threat in the middle of the night. He tries to make some coffee to give himself some relief, proving that though perhaps a Baptist in training, he was a Lutheran at heart. He prays, and he thinks about the theology he learned in university and thinks of the philosophical answers to the problems of sin and evil, and he doesn't see the answer there. And finally, he says, I knew religion had to become real to me, and I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down and I prayed, and I prayed a prayer that night. And I said, God, I think I know what's right. And I'm not quoting here, but it's close. I think what I'm doing is right, but I'm losing faith now. I'm weary and I'm faltering and I'm weak. And the people can't see me weak, because if they see me weak, then they will get to be weak. And I don't know what to do. I'm faltering and I'm losing my way. And Cain says, and it seemed to me that I could hear a voice saying, stand up, Martin Luther. Stand up for truth. Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. And truly, I will be with you to the very end of the age. That was Cain's personal encounter with the living God that he talked about for the rest of his life. There's more to the story, and you can catch some of that, I think, in the sessions if they're online, but that's the spiritual life one. The civil rights career one I'll sort of skip over because it's the version of Dr. Cain that you will be generally familiar with from high school, college, just general literacy. Dr. Cain is a civil rights leader from Montgomery to Birmingham to the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom to Selma to Chicago to Memphis. The third one, the session we did at the end of the week, was Dr. Cain as a political figure. We looked at Dr. Cain's understanding of political change, where in Cain's view, the demonstrations in Birmingham, which the Birmingham Public Safety Commissioner Eugene Connor, known as Bull, responded to with police dogs and fire hoses, instantly turning national opinion against the segregationists. These demonstrations were, in Cain's view, the catalyzing event that led to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the monumental statute that outlawed Jim Crow in the South and commanded integration in business, public places, employment elsewhere. Similarly, in Cain's view, the Selma to Montgomery March, a voting rights march that ended at the Pettus Bridge with nonviolent protesters being beaten by law enforcement, which ABC showed on national television, cutting away from what it was otherwise showing, a showing of the World War II movie Judgment at Nuremberg. That led, in Cain's view, to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So around this point, 1965, 1966, Cain starts campaigns in the North, beginning with Chicago, where, as he put it, he'd never seen mobs as hostile and as hate-filled, even in Mississippi and Alabama, as the mobs he had seen in Chicago. Cain's idea was that Chicago would be the demonstration that would lead to national action on poverty and economic justice, just like Birmingham had led to the Civil Rights Act and Selma had led to the Voting Rights Act. This did not happen. The Chicago campaign ended in a disappointing way for Cain, with a weak settlement that it became clear the city would evade. And Cain's next campaign, the Poor People's Campaign, intended to be a multiracial march of a nonviolent demonstration of people without a lot of money to Washington, D.C., would be his last attempt to force action in the way he had tried to force action in Chicago. So contrast this vision with the vision of social change that was outlined by Bayard Rustin, the chief architect of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom and a gay man. Bayard Rustin's vision, outlined in an essay called From Protest to Politics that he published in 1965, was that the era of mass nonviolent demonstration was over. That demonstrations were successful against Jim Crow and laws creating segregation and public accommodations drinking fountains, schools, but that the new era of the civil rights movement, the struggle for against poverty and for economic justice, opportunity and housing and jobs, required political action. So the hard, unglamorous, difficult, uninspiring in many cases work of registering voters, building coalitions, making concessions. The last 50 years have been a chance to test these two visions because obviously the economic justice work of the civil rights movement that Cain spent the last several years of his life on remains very much unfinished. And it is not clear that mass nonviolent demonstrations, for example, the Poor People's March for the 50th anniversary that is happening right now in 2018, will lead to national action on poverty and economic justice. Contrast this, though, with the slow, painstaking work of politics. Many figures from the civil rights movement, particularly John Lewis, the head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, beaten and jailed many times in the South, now, of course, Representative John Lewis, a member of Congress from Georgia, have decided to throw their personal careers and energies behind this painstaking work of politics, making, to take John Lewis's example, student financial aid a little bit more accessible to give more families a chance to go to college. And that, I think, is maybe, as Bayard Rustin suggested, an opening that there may no longer be the possibility that mass nonviolent action will catalyze the nation in the way that it did in 1957, 1963, 1965. And it may be the case that the unfinished work of the civil rights movement needs to be carried forward through politics. So that's what we did this week. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us for another Holden Village podcast. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.